You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Last month, New York Times Baghdad bureau chief Anthony Shadid died of an apparent asthma attack as he was making his way out of Syria. He had recently completed a memoir published by Houghton Mifflin called House of Stone, a memoir of home, family, and a lost Middle East. Joining me now to talk about the book and Anthony's life and career are his widow, Netta Bakri, who is also a New York Times reporter, and Rajiv Chandrasekharan, the national editor for The Washington Post, where he and Anthony Shadid were colleagues for many years. Welcome to our show.
Thank you.
Good to be on with you.
Rajiv, although you were colleagues for many years, how much did you know about his story before you read this book?
Well, I knew that his family generations ago had hailed from the town of Marjayoun, but really little more than that, and not until summer of 2006 when he decided that he wanted to take some time off and start to rebuild this house. But the story here of his family, this wonderfully lyrical magisterial tale, the story of the rebuilding of the ancestral home, I had no idea just what an adventure it was and what a the world that he had discovered in Marjayoun, the challenge of building this house. So much of this was a surprise, a wonderful surprise, in some ways a very riveting surprise as I turned through the pages of the memoir.
What about you, Netta? You had a working relationship with Anthony before you were married. So when you just knew him as a colleague, did you know much of this?
Well, actually, the first time I met him, Anthony told me that he was planning to take a year off and move to Marjayoun to rebuild his grandmother's house and write a book about it. Pretty soon after, he invited me to go down and look at the house. The work hasn't started yet. So yes, I was there from the beginning, from when he moved to Marjayoun and lived there and started rebuilding the house. And
that was 2007.
That was summer 2007, yes.
Was this a way for him to recover from both the pressures of the job and the breakup of his first marriage?
Well, the divorce had happened a few years before, but I guess he was still, trying to recover from it and, from not being with his daughter.
He says he renovated the house with his daughter in mind.
That's true. He did. And, I think he had been in a region full of violence and wars and bloodshed that he kind of needed a quiet place to kind of rediscover himself and find some peace. And that was the place where he did that.
And Lebanon, which has experienced a number of battles, a civil war, a war between Hezbollah and Israel, that was a nice, quiet, peaceful place to go to?
Oddly, it was. It's a quiet town in, like, the end of nowhere in Lebanon, really, really far away from everything. It's very close to the Israeli border, but in some way, it's kind of still tucked away and kind of quiet. There are hardly anyone who lives there anymore, except for the people who were helping building the house and some neighbors and some, old couples who still live there. It's really, that's all it is there. Really quiet and really kind of peaceful.
Rajiv, Anthony writes that it was very hard for him to cover the conflict in Lebanon, more so than Iraq. Why do you think that was? Because it was his home country?
Well, there was a personal connection there, of course. Although we have to remember, Anthony wasn't born in Lebanon. Mm-hmm. He's a couple of generations removed, but still there was that family tie. When you have that personal connection, when you want to go back and rebuild that house and want to have a life there, it feels very different. I think, than when you're in the midst of Baghdad. And even if the Iraq War was in some ways far more violent and chaotic, and just the pressures and stresses of it were far greater there, I think that for him, it Lebanon and the strife there was probably far more personally affecting.
And in the book, Anthony alternates between his own story of returning to Majayoun to renovate the house and the story of his family leaving Majayoun and Lebanon behind. So he was kind of discovering his family as he was rebuilding the house?
Yes and no. He had done a lot of research before growing up in Oklahoma City, and I think he always had in the back of his mind an idea about writing something about his family or documenting their immigration.
Were there any people still alive of the people who had
when
left?
When he was writing the mm-hmm. book? Yes, some of them. You know, distant cousins were still alive, and he did a lot of interviews with them. But he had a lot of interviews that he had done 20 years before he started writing the book. And he did discover a lot while he was writing the book, too, when he moved to Majayoun and when he met old people in Majayoun who had, you know, known so much about his family history and known his great-grandmother.
Well, what did they think of him and his project?
Well, he was met with a lot of skepticism in the beginning. People thought anything about him from being crazy to a spy to just someone who is really, really rich and doesn't know what to do with his money. But then, you know, Anthony was just a really modest and genuinely honest and you know, kind of charming guy. And just, you know, a few months later into the project, everybody became his best friend and had a great relationship with everybody.
But they do reveal grudges that they've held for years. They guilt trip Anthony for not calling. They can argue with the best of them. Is that typical of the Middle East or something that's particular to this area or Lebanese?
You know, that's a hard question to answer, I don't want to offend anyone, but I did see a lot of that in Majayoun because everybody wanted to be Anthony's friend. And so if he was in Majayoun and didn't call, you know, X and called Y, X would be really mad. And then it would just be like everybody's talking about how he called this person and not this person and why. And they would come over and guilt trip him for hours.
And he got a kick out of it, obviously. He writes lovingly even when they're being completely irritating.
He did. He enjoyed it a lot. And it just, to him, it was just fascinating, something that he was never used to.
Now, but here's a guy who's used to working in stressful situations. And although renovating a house anywhere can be stressful, it seems to take on a whole new set of challenges when you're doing it in a town like Majayoun. Was he prepared for the delays, the management of egos and the local commentary on his every decision?
You know, he was so surprisingly unprepared. He thought that when, you know, someone would tell him this is going to be done in a week, he thought that in a week he's going to be at the house and it's actually going to be done. And he would tell me this and just would listen to him and not say anything because I didn't want to disappoint him, but knowing very well that a week was going to mean weeks and maybe even months, and you just get frustrated and upset and disappointed and sad and mad. And then I think finally, after a couple of months, he realized that tomorrow or in a week does not mean tomorrow or in a week.
And then there are these moments of absurdity, like the fact that he ended up with a painter who was colorblind.
That's true.
Now, Rajiv, were you aware of any of this while it was happening?
Not the
He wasn't calling you to complain?
Details. He wasn't, fortunately, but you know, those delays, those moments when his contractors were in some ways being so infuriating, actually lend themselves to you know, an even more fascinating story. And Anthony wasn't the type of guy who would simply, you know, dismiss them with a huff, but would engage with them, and their stories fill the pages of this book too, and Anthony's evolving relationship with them. You know, it took, as I read through the book, it took me back to the first year he and I were in Baghdad in 2003, just after the fall of Saddam's government and the arrival of the American forces. And we had built up a staff of Iraqis to work with us at the Washington Post Bureau, translators and drivers and guards and whatnot. And while most other journalists simply looked at our Iraqi journalists and colleagues as the hired help or would engage with them simply on transactional details, Anthony really got to know most of them, if not all of them, and know their families and know something about their histories, and could sit there in the courtyard smoking and drinking tea with them for hours, learning about their lives. And it was that very same Anthony that I lived with and experienced that I saw coming through the pages of this book in his life in Marjayoun.
Now, how well did he speak Arabic, Neda?
He spoke it very, very well.
Because throughout the book, there's a little there's this concept of, is it bait? B-A-Y-T in
bait.
Bait.
Yes, that's home.
Uh-huh.
He spoke it very well, just like I did. First, when he got to Lebanon in 2006, he had his accent was a mixture of Iraqi and Egypt because he had lived in those two places before. But then when he got to Lebanon and lived there, you know, he just spoke it like a Lebanese.
And people are very aware of those subtleties.
There are.
The flexibility and different shadings of Arabic are evident throughout the book. And that was something that he obviously wants to bring across to his English-speaking readers, because this is something that we might not understand otherwise. I am assuming that the American military has lots of problems with that, even people who do speak Arabic in the military.
Mm-hmm. I think he did understand. He could differentiate, you know, where people came from or what part of a country they are from or which country they are from just by listening to them talk.
Rajif, it has to be incredibly difficult at times to translate a word that has many different meanings.
Incredibly difficult, but so incredibly valuable to understand those nuances. And those were the nuances that really shone through in his reporting. We saw on the pages of the Washington Post and in more recent years in the New York Times. You know, in Iraq, he could, in talking to somebody, understand if they were from Anbar province, if they came from Fallujah, if they came from Basra in the deep south. In many ways, like we in the United States can distinguish a New York accent from one in Texas, he understood that. And what's so remarkable about this is he didn't grow up speaking Arabic as a young boy in Oklahoma.
This wasn't spoken in the house?
No, it was never spoken in the house. He learned it when he was 22, I think, in Cairo.
Yeah, he took some classes at the University of Wisconsin, mm-hmm. but really it was an immersion program in Cairo. He learned it the hard way, and that's what is really remarkable about this. This wasn't something that he had picked up from just hearing conversations at home as a toddler.
He refers to the Levant often in the book. Was that a concept of the Middle East that appealed to him?
It was actually very much so. Yes. I think it just reminded him of a time when the Middle East was a place with no borders, was more cosmopolitan, was more appealing to the whole world, was
and people got along. Because what about this town? Is it divided like most of Lebanon between Sunnis, Shiites, and Christians?
It wouldn't be Lebanese if it wasn't divided like this. Absolutely, but not Sunnis, Shiites, and Christians, because it's a Christian town. But divided along political lines and political alliances more than religious.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, but you say political alliances, but often the religious. Religion actually determined the political party you were in.
That's true, but unfortunately, especially in recent years, these have also become divided, and you saw more divisions within the same, you know, religious line.
My guests are Neda Bakri, New York Times reporter, the widow of Anthony Shadid, the wonderful reporter from The New York Times, who was a guest on the show many times. We would speak to him from all sorts of different places for some of the most amazing on-the-spot reportage. And then, of course, the last time we spoke to him, we were talking about how he had been held captive in Libya for a while, and that was an amazing story. He wrote a memoir called House of Stone, a memoir of home, family, and a lost Middle East, which is published by Houghton Mifflin. Also with us is one of his longtime colleagues, Rajiv Chandrasekharan, the national editor for The Washington Post. We will continue our conversation after we take a little break. Stay with us. We're back with our discussion of a book called House of Stone, a memoir of home, family, and lost and a lost Middle East. It's from Houghton Mifflin. And originally we assumed that we'd be talking about it with Anthony Shadid when we first heard about the book. We said immediately to the publisher, yes, we want Anthony back on our show. And then came the shocking news of his dying of an apparent asthma attack as he was making his way out of Syria during the current conflict there. Otherwise, he probably would still be covering that story. With us are Neda Bakri, a New York Times reporter, who also is his widow, and Rajiv Chandrasekharan, who is the national editor for The Washington Post, where he and Anthony Shadid were colleagues for many years. Is this, Rajiv, in many ways a rare book for a war correspondent to have written?
It is. It's, you know, most of us write books about the shooting, about being there as the bullets are whizzing over our heads. To step back and to write such a personal tale, and to write a book that is so textured, layered, and about rebuilding a house, about rediscovering one's ancestral village. That's not something most reporters do.
But it's also about recovery, and that is something we do understand for somebody who puts himself into harm's way all the time.
It is, although that again is a subject that hasn't really been tackled in a real meaningful way, I feel, like this. And he does so in this. And so this is a book, I mean, for me, that really it worked on so many levels, and it as a friend of his, as somebody who had spent, you know, months and months reporting with him and living with him, it taught me so much that I didn't know about him and about you know, a country and about a process of something as simple as trying to rebuild a home becomes a marvelous story in the hands of Anthony.
By the end of the renovation project, it seems that Anthony had grown accustomed to the quiet life that he had in Majayun, but then he went back to reporting. What drew him back?
You know, I think it was always, he knew that once the house is done, he was going to go back to do what he, you know, does best and what he loves to do. So it was only meant to be a year off where he would rebuild, and then he actually ended up taking a year and a half. He rebuilt it during 1 year, and then wrote the book the following 6 months, and then went back to work.
I mean, but couldn't he have gone back to a nice desk in Washington or New York?
He's not that kind of guy. He wanted to be on the ground, you know, reporting, running, talking to people, meeting people, and writing about their lives and how, you know, their lives have been changed and impacted by the events that have been going on in the Middle East.
And in this book, he describes himself as ambitious. Is that ambition part of what drew him back, do you think? Because being a war correspondent is something that does make you more prominent in the field, doesn't it?
He was extremely ambitious. But I don't think he was ambitious, or what he wanted to be as a war correspondent. I think he was always interested in covering the Middle East. It was the only place that he ever imagined covering or being good at covering. And unfortunately, you know, there are plenty of wars and conflicts there. I don't think he chose to be a war correspondent. He chose to be a Middle East correspondent.
But he was very generous with his time. As I said earlier, he came on the show numerous times over the years to discuss what was going on in the Middle East. Was he concerned that the American public wasn't always getting the full story of what was happening in that part of the world?
He was absolutely concerned about that, and that's why he decided to become to work in the Middle East. He thought that the Middle East was not being covered as it should be, that people are not getting the full picture or getting a fair reportage from the Middle East. So, and you know, he hoped and aspired that what he was writing was making things a little bit better.
Rajiv, in this memoir, House of Stone, he writes about how journalists rarely stick around to cover the story of recovery. Was that something that Anthony hoped to do more of, or was he more interested in bringing out the stories of people as the fighting was still going on?
Well, when you look at the work he did in Iraq for several years and then beyond across the broader Middle East.
And you were with him in Baghdad for part of that time.
And he was amazing at covering the conflicts as they were unfolding and finding those stories that helped to broaden our understanding of those conflicts, focusing on people and on families and giving voice to the voiceless. But then what he did beyond that was so remarkable was he did search for that recovery, and in many cases He didn't always find it, or the recovery that he saw in places like Iraq, didn't look to many of us like it was recovery at all, but perhaps another chapter in what felt like a never ending conflict. But he wasn't one of those guys who parachuted in, spent a few weeks on the ground and left. This was part, as Netta was saying, this is what he aspired to for years and years. He wanted to be the best guy out there covering the Middle East. And so that meant a real commitment. That meant going back to places again and again and understanding how the story was transforming, but specifically how the lives of the people who were living through these great conflicts were themselves transforming.
But it also has a real emotional wear and tear on somebody. I spoke to a journalist who witnessed the killings at Fallujah, and he told me once that he had developed PTSD as a result of just trying to live with what he had seen.
Well, sorry, go ahead, Rajiv.
Both of you can answer that. You first, Rajiv.
Well, yeah, I think it did take a toll. Even though, Anthony wasn't the sort of guy who would, every day want to be in the middle of a firefight, in many ways, what he saw in really deeply engaging with people was even more affecting when you got to understand the real human toll that these conflicts were taking. So in many ways, I think, this did accumulate, and the process of rebuilding that house was in some ways very, very cathartic, because in a tableau of destruction that he had witnessed from Baghdad and beyond, he was able to actually give life to something. And I think that in the midst of what has been such a wrenching decade that he had covered, this was a moment to actually do something that felt like it was creating as opposed to bearing witness to destruction.
As fellow journalists, Netta, who worked together both at the Washington Post and the New York Times, reporting on the Middle East especially, were you able to understand each other's choices to put yourself into harm's way?
Again, I don't think it was putting oneself in harm's way. I think it was a story that he felt needed to be covered, and it was more of a commitment to journalism and to stories and to people and, to what was affecting them that he felt like needed to be covered. I met Anthony when he was already a successful journalist, so I never felt like it would be right for me to tell him where to go and where not to go and what to do and what not to do.
But you could compare notes. I always wonder about whether there are things that you can talk about that as other people would never really fully understand?
Like what exactly?
Well, you know, I went out today and this happened and blah, blah, blah. It's one thing to report it. And I read it and I say, wow. It's another thing to talk about it with somebody else who's had a similar experience and can understand it on the full emotional level.
That's true. You know, after he's been in a dangerous place, he would come home and just tell me how exactly it felt being there, or how he felt when he was seeing what he was seeing. And it just always just, you know, put him in a really – or depressed him. In a big way.
Rajiv, do war correspondents compare notes a lot, or do they prefer not to talk about it, to talk about pleasanter things when they're together having dinner?
Oh, we all compare notes, you know, often over drinks, and we did a lot of that, and he did it with other colleagues. But Anthony was also different, and the biggest reason in this sort of after – You've been through a hairy situation and you're coming back. Anthony found true solace in family and had a real connection to Netta and his young son Malik, to his daughter Layla, and to his home in Oklahoma. I remember sitting there in Baghdad talking to him in the summer of 2003, and you know, we were all sort of thinking about, okay, when are we going to get our vacations? Where are we going to go? And for Anthony, it wasn't going off to some beach somewhere like many of our colleagues, but it was going back to Oklahoma to see his folks.
Did you like Oklahoma, Netta?
I love Oklahoma. It's a really nice city.
Last year, Anthony and three of his New York Times colleagues were captured and held for 6 days by the Libyan government. Did that change the way Anthony saw the job or the risks that he was willing to take?
You know, I think it made him all the more committed to the job, because he witnessed firsthand what people that he had written about for so long are going through, you know, the beating, the oppression, the mistreatment, the torture. That, you know, he witnessed all that firsthand, and it just made him more determined.
But he also experienced things. He'd been shot in the back by a sniper in Ramallah in 2002.
That's true, and I think that, you know, that and then Libya just made him more committed to what he.
And after he came home from his ordeal in Libya, he went to Majayun. Was it at all surprising that that's where he would want to go?
Not at all. He got on the phone with me after they left Libya, and he said, I just want to go home to Majayun, because that's where he just felt, you know, the happiest. And we picked him up from the airport and drove straight to Majayun, and he had a great time.
Was the house completely finished? Was it comfortable
to
stay in? Oh,
yeah. We finished it in 2008, actually. So we've been living there. It's like a weekend house and a summer house. So we go there all the time. And it's, fully furnished and very comfortable.
My guests are Netta Bakri, a New York Times reporter, the widow of Anthony Shadid, who has left us a wonderful memoir called House of Stone, a memoir of home, family, and a lost Middle East. Also with us is Rajiv Chandrasekharan, the national editor of The Washington Post, who was a colleague of Anthony's for many years and wants to share some of his experiences of Anthony with us. In the book's epilogue, Anthony describes what he saw of the Arab Spring. Was he hopeful about what the events of last year could mean for the region?
You know, he felt incredibly lucky that he witnessed this day, that he was here to see these uprisings. And as far as optimism, you know, he was happy. He was happy, finally these people that he wrote about for so long, about their oppression, about dictatorships, about violence, something was changing. But he also felt or thought or, you know, believed that it was going to be a long way before something actually changes and before, you know, there would be peace or quiet or...
Well, Rajiv, the fighting in that's connected to the Arab Spring has claimed a number of reporters' lives, Libya recently, in Syria. We've had other war correspondents here to talk about whether they felt that the cost of reporting these stories sometimes is too high.
Well, I think any time we lose a colleague, you know, that's too high of a cost. Anthony was a dear friend. We've lost Marie Colvin, an American who hails from the New York area, who's working for the Sunday Times of Britain. Chris Hondros and Tim Hetherington, photojournalists in Libya. This is way too high of a price.
In fact, people seem to be going after journalists in some cases now. They didn't in the past.
I agree. In the past, the journalists, along with the humanitarian aid workers, enjoyed some degree of immunity. Now we're just seen as lucrative of targets as the next guy, and that's a real shame. But all of those individuals, and Anthony Chief among them, they were out there because they believed in the importance of telling the story. And, we were all the richer in our understanding of the Middle East from Anthony's dispatches. And I fear that, we're going to be all that poorer going ahead. He understood and interpreted and conveyed that region for the American audience in a way that nobody has, I believe, ever before. And, I do hope. So, a young journalist will look to his example and perhaps, somebody else in some years will give us the sort of work that he did. But he really stands as a singular figure in the world of American journalism.
Now, Ned, can you imagine yourself going back into harm's way?
I have a 2-year-old and he doesn't have a father anymore, so obviously, my priorities have shifted a lot, and I don't think not in the immediate future. No, I don't think I can.
In a very moving piece in last Sunday's New York Times, Anthony's colleague, the photographer Tyler Hicks, who was with him when he died, described Anthony as being eager to go to Turkey and write his stories of what he had seen in Syria. Now, Syria was a special situation because you had to be in there secretly. And that's why you had to write the story elsewhere, either in Lebanon, as many people have done. Most of the stories we hear out of Syria are from Beirut or from Turkey. Where were you at the time?
I was actually in Turkey with our son, Malik, waiting for Anthony to come. And we were planning on spending a few days there. He wanted to write his stories. He said he had 3 stories. He had outlined them in his head and could not leave to wait them. He was so excited. He told me when he would call, from Syria, just briefly, that it was the best reporting trip of his life and just could not wait to get back and write his stories. He had 4 notebooks full of notes and was really excited to write them. And so we got to Turkey, and then 2 hours later, we got a call.
Were you aware of just how severe his asthma was? Was this a problem in the past?
Everybody knew that he had asthma, but I don't think, I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we don't think of asthma as something that
could kill you in 2012.
Although I'm sure it is doing just that for people
all over
the world. But when it happens to somebody like Anthony Shadid, we become aware of it.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, both of you, for sharing all of this with us on our show. I've been speaking with Anthony Shadid's widow. Unfortunately, we couldn't have Anthony here to talk about his book, House of Stone, a memoir of home, family, and a lost Middle East, which is published by Houghton Mifflin Harcourt. But his widow, also a wonderful reporter, Neda Bakri of the New York Times, has been here, and so has Rajiv Chandrasekharan, the national editor for The Washington Post. Thank you both so much.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.